act as your guardian. It's my job to keep you safe, so you can testify at trial if you choose to. Lee and I are both confident we can get an acquittal at your next trial if we cannot find enough evidence beforehand to get the charges dismissed. If you're harmed in any way, it's on me. What about Liam? That fucking bastard has been living life as a free man while I... Tessa had no words to finish her sentence.
I know.
But if the bastard has the slightest bit of conscience, he's been looking over his shoulder for the past decade. Here is what I can do. I can keep you safe. Lee and I can do our best to keep you out of that fucked up place you've called home. And when you're a free woman, you can hunt the bastard down. But until then, we have to follow the rules, both of us. This is day one. And I don't know about you, but I am tired. It's been a very long day, and tomorrow will be even longer. Let's call it a night, get some rest, and rethink this tomorrow. Deal? He held his hand out to her. As much as she hated to admit it, he was right. She needed to sleep to clear her head. She reached for his hand. Deal.
Darlene fixed a room up for you, downstairs. I'm staying upstairs in that guest room. I hope that's okay.
Would it matter if it wasn't? She asked, still slightly pissed that he had so much control over her.
You can sleep in the upstairs guest room if you want. It doesn't matter to me. A bed is a bed. I thought it might make it easier on you, sleeping downstairs.
Of course. Sam was thoughtful, though she hated admitting that just now. No, it's fine. Which room? There were 6 bedrooms in this house. Total waste of space. She and Joel had planned on a family, and maybe there would have been that son had he lived. Or 2.
The room where all the books were.
Ah, my den. Sam, please tell me you didn't toss my books. He stood up and took her hands in his.
Actually, I think you'll be pleased when you see what Darlene arranged. Follow me.
She felt odd being led around in her own home. Sam went down the long hall that led to the 3 other guest rooms.
In here,
he said, opening the door and turning on the lights. Tessa entered the room.
Sam, this is a library.
She saw so many of her familiar titles, some of her college textbooks she had hung on to. Floor-to-ceiling shelves held all the books she had collected throughout the years.
Thank you, Sam. This is perfect.
The furnishings were plush and inviting. A fireplace had been added, and 2 armchairs now flanked the window. All the creature comforts a die-hard book lover could want.
I'll tell Darlene you approve. Now you might want to sleep in one of the other guest rooms. They have been redecorated with all the latest gadgets and gizmos in mind. I'm going upstairs now. I'm exhausted.
Night, Tess. He smiled and left her in her new library. Good night, Sam. He waved. She decided she would sleep in here, surrounded by her books, which held mostly happy memories. It would be the first time that she had slept in this house since she had been arrested for the murder of her husband and 2 daughters. Chapter 11. Tessa realized she had forgotten to ask Sam about pajamas and toiletries. Before he went to sleep, she hurried upstairs to the guest room where they'd looked at the watch earlier. She knocked lightly on the door.
Come in, Sam called out.
Hesitant, in case he wasn't dressed, she called out, Sam, I hate to be a pest, but I need something to sleep in and a toothbrush. The door swung open before she could finish her sentence.
I totally forgot. In one of the guest rooms, I'm unsure which one,
but it should be fully stocked with all the things you'll need in the chest of drawers. Darlene's magic? Sam raked his hand through his hair. Tessa thought he looked incredibly handsome just then. She took a deep breath.
Actually, it was me. I thought... Never mind what I thought. You should have everything you need in one of the guest rooms and bathrooms. And Darlene did take care of all those bubbles and lotions.
He smiled at her, and for the first time in years, she felt glad to be a woman. Breathless, she nodded.
I appreciate this. Thanks, Sam. Night.
She hurried back to the first floor before she did something stupid, but she did hear him laughing on her way downstairs. She grinned. She found everything she needed in the room across the hall from the library. The furnishings were warm wood, and the draperies and comforter were done in soft shades of creams and beige, nothing like the dark green and navy colors she had used all those years ago. Tessa found a pair of pink silk pajamas in the top drawer, along with several pair of pastel-colored bikini underwear. She blushed when she thought of Sam's hands touching something so personal. Joel never purchased anything as intimate for her. Flowers and chocolates, which she had adored, but never a set of pajamas and pretty panties. All very feminine. And then it dawned on her. Sam had purchased these things not because he had hoped for any possible future intimacy between them, but because he knew she would appreciate fine clothes after her years of wearing an orange jumpsuit. He was thoughtful and kind. Feeling foolish, she was going to indulge herself tonight by soaking in the jacuzzi tub she had seen when she sneaked a look into the bathroom. Before, this guest bath had only boasted a shower, a sink, and a toilet. The old had been replaced with newer, modern, much more luxurious fixtures, all done in the same warm shades of beige as the bedroom. The vanity was lined with shampoos, body washes, razors, everything she would need. She turned the taps on in the jacuzzi, setting the water temperature as high as she could stand, then added a gardenia-scented bath bomb to the water. Darlene had thought of everything. Someday, she promised herself, she would thank her. She peeled off her slacks, careful of the ankle monitor, before she realized it probably wasn't waterproof. She had to hang her foot over the side, and tomorrow she had to check to see if she could shower with it on. For now, Tessa wasn't going to let a little thing like an ankle monitor prevent her from soaking in this giant tub. She had fantasized about hot baths for years. Prison meant 3-minute showers with lukewarm water. For as long as she could, she would enjoy these luxuries. While lowering herself into the hot, steamy, gardenia-scented water, tears filled her eyes. It had been so very long since she had actually enjoyed anything so simple as a hot bath. She closed her eyes and let her mind wander. Her first thoughts were of Sam, and the enormous responsibility he had undertaken when involving himself in her case. Sam was more than he seemed. Sharp, intelligent, mysterious, thoughtful. He'd propelled Jameson Pharmaceuticals into areas of research that could change the course of modern medicine. New cancer drugs that changed and lengthened lives. He wasn't a sit-behind-the-desk kind of CEO. Joel must have known this when he promoted him from CFO to CEO early in 2011. Tessa tried to focus her thoughts elsewhere. She did not want to compare Sam to her deceased husband. It wasn't fair to either of them. Her daughters. They would be almost 21 years old now. Maybe they would have had children of their own. Or they would be in college pursuing their studies and looking forward to interesting and productive careers. There were so many possibilities. Or had been. Gone with the slash of a box cutter. She shivered. She did not want to relive the day she had come home to find her family, but her mind couldn't stop the images from appearing. She had blocked them out for years, but now, when she tried to relax, they came back in full force. Tessa drove her red Porsche out of the ferry and made a mental checklist of all the extra things Piper and Poppy would need for an extended stay off the island. Anything to distract her from thinking about the horror her daughters had been subjected to. Her eyes flooded with tears, and her heart raced a mile a minute. No, not now. Concentrate on driving home. She needed to focus on the items she had to pack. She had to focus on the children, on their escape. Poppy and Piper would need their summer clothes, swimsuits and sandals, not to mention all their beach gear. Pails, sand molds for their sculptures, floats, and this year she'd promised them they could get boogie boards. Their crisp white blouses and navy skirts worn at St. Cecilia's, the private girls' school they'd attended since preschool, would be left behind. Tessa would continue their education once this nightmare ended. Both were avid readers, and she would bring their Kindles and make sure the Harry Potter series and a lengthy list of reading material were loaded on their electronic readers. Of course, she couldn't forget to bring their brand new iPads. As much as she disliked it, she knew there would be times when the quirky games they could access would save the girls from complete and utter boredom. To be sure, she would bring plenty of board games, the collection of their favorite movies, which they never seemed to tire of, and an endless supply of drawing paper with brightly colored markers and pencils. Both girls were very artistic and attended advanced art classes every Wednesday afternoon. Tessa smiled when she remembered the family portrait Poppy had drawn just a few weeks ago. She'd proudly hung it on the refrigerator with her favorite Harry Potter magnet. It was actually quite good, except Tessa thought she'd looked pregnant. She wanted to ask Poppy why, but didn't because she feared cramping her artistic style. Maybe it was time to think about another child? Last year, Poppy had asked for a little brother for Christmas. Tessa had laughed, never giving another child much serious thought as she had her hands full with the twins. But now, maybe it was time to reconsider. Joel often hinted he wanted a son. As soon as this horrid nightmare ended, if ever, Tessa promised to give the idea of another child some serious thought. On her way home after spending parts of the last 3 days on the mainland preparing for a stay of indefinite length, she was beyond tired as she headed north on Highway 41. Brief flashes of colorful signs zoomed by as she drove past the familiar sights, including the small strip of stores facing the beach. Tessa and the girls had spent many afternoons roaming the stores, shopping, having lunch at their favorite cafe, and oftentimes spending hours looking for that perfect pair of shoes. Tessa gave a sad grin. Both girls loved shoes, loved trying them on more than anything. Now, however, she wasn't sure there would ever be another innocent mother-daughter outing since they'd told her what happened. A nightmare both girls had endured for almost a year. The fear in their eyes haunted her, twisted her insides in ways she'd thought had been put to rest. And now those feelings were back with a vengeance. Only now, the degradation had been forced on her daughters. Anger forced her to press her foot down on the accelerator. Suddenly overwhelmed with the need to be with her girls, Tessa raced along the road. The street was lined with palm trees, and normally Tessa never grew tired of viewing the gallant trees as they stood tall and proud, flanking the road. Now, they passed in a greenish-brown blur. Tessa thought it a bit too much, but Joel often reminded her of their position, telling her it was his duty to keep his family safe. Kidnapping the children of wealthy businessmen wasn't unheard of, but all the security they'd provided had not protected any of them from the evil that lurked inside the supposed safety of their home. Tessa's sky-blue eyes filled with tears. Her precious daughters, spoiled by that low-life, sick form of humanity. She would see to it that he went to prison for a very long time, if not worse. She punched in the code that opened the gates to the long drive leading to the 7,000-square-foot mansion looking out over the ocean, the house that she and Joel called home. When she had departed on Friday afternoon, Tessa had hated leaving the girls at such a critical time, but it had been necessary in order to protect them from the media and God knows what else. She had not been too successful in protecting them from their uncle. Maybe she could focus her energies on keeping them out of the spotlight. Once she contacted the authorities, she was certain that everything that had happened would be made public. The media hounds would have a field day. All hell would break loose. She and the girls would need the privacy of San Maribel now more than ever. Knowing that the twins would be emotionally and psychologically scarred after revealing the abuse they had suffered at the hands of their Uncle Liam, she'd immediately taken action. Once she'd recovered from the initial shock, she contacted Jill Ambers Wednesday afternoon. Jill was a good friend as well as a forensic psychiatrist who specialized in the sexual abuse of children. Tessa never dreamed she would need to see her friend on a professional basis, but knew that life didn't always go as one expected. That very evening, Jill came to the house to examine both girls. She'd said the girls would need extensive therapy, as they'd exhibited a new and intense fear of discussing what Liam had done to them. How well she knew that some adults could never be trusted. But that was for another time. Now her focus was on her children. She would protect them no matter the cost. On Friday afternoon, Tessa had gone to the mainland to prepare for their arrival. It was rare for her to take the girls away from home during the school year, certainly not on a Monday night, when their normal routine would consist of deciding what to have for dinner, doing homework, and discussing any upcoming plans for the week ahead. But after Wednesday's revelation, Tessa couldn't imagine keeping them home a minute longer than necessary. Jill had promised to check on the girls that weekend. Thursday night, after Joel had finally returned from a business trip to England, as they lay in bed, she'd told him she needed a break, some time to herself, said she was mentally exhausted from the kids and all that caring for them had involved while he had been away the past week. He'd accepted her explanation, telling her he had to work on Saturday and possibly a half-day Sunday, but assured Tessa that Rosa, their housekeeper and occasional sitter, would be there for the girls. With Jill's reassurance and believing that the girls were as safe as they could be since Liam was in Japan, she'd quickly arranged for Jameson's pilot and co-pilot to meet her at the small local airport. She'd insisted they not file a flight plan, though the pilot explained to her they would need to fly at a low altitude and stay below 8,000 feet to stay out of Class A airspace. She had not cared one way or the other and had sworn them to secrecy, telling both they'd lose their jobs if they told anyone, that no matter what happened, they must remain silent. She ordered them not to tell Joel. They'd sworn their allegiance to her, knowing this had to be terribly important, as Tessa was respected and well-liked by all the employees at Jameson Pharmaceuticals, and would never make such a request unless it was a matter of life and death. Jittery, as though she were over-caffeinated, she recalled Poppy's odd behavior as she prepared their breakfast on Wednesday morning. She'd been angry and hateful when Tessa woke her up that morning, which was in itself extremely unusual. Poppy never awakened in a sour mood. Piper, on the other hand, needed her quiet time, and Tessa always woke her first to allow her the few extra minutes she needed to start her day. Looking back, Piper had seemed a bit too eager to jump out of bed. How could she have missed the signs? Both girls were kind, well-behaved, and usually polite, or as polite as one could expect from 10-year-olds. The girls had extraordinary talents, which she and Joel encouraged. In hindsight, she should have known something wasn't right when neither wanted to attend their art class Wednesday afternoon. They'd both begged to stay home from school with her, and she firmly told them no, thinking this could become a habit. Then, out of the blue, they announced that they wanted to share a bedroom again. That alone should have sent alarm bells ringing. They both liked their privacy. And the lights. A week ago, both girls had suddenly begun to insist that their bedside lights remain on. They'd stopped wanting their night lights when they were 5. They'd both been snippy, too. Now she wished she'd taken them in her arms and simply held them. Maybe if she'd done that, they would have opened up to her sooner. The hell with art classes and school. This would remain a part of them for the rest of their lives and define the women they became. God, how it sickened her to think of Liam, Joel's younger half-brother. She'd never liked him, not since the first time Joel had introduced him to her at a family gathering in Miami a few months before she and Joel were married. Handsome, maybe too handsome, with sandy brown hair and coffee-colored eyes, he'd seemed much too eager to please. Slick and phony, she'd thought. And the stories he told were so far-fetched that Tessa had doubted Liam's truthfulness. She'd wanted to tell Joel she didn't like him, but this was his brother, and she had not wanted to hurt his feelings. Joel was totally the opposite of his brother. Joel's mother had died in a tragic accident when he was 12. He didn't like to talk about his mother, and Tessa respected that. She knew that he and his mother had been extremely close, and again, she understood and respected his feelings. A year after his mother's death, his father remarried. Liam was born almost a year to the day after his father's marriage to his second wife, Rochelle, a woman 10 years his junior whom he'd met at the Viceroy Club in Miami, where she'd tended bar. Joel didn't dislike her, but later, as he grew older, he came to understand that she'd married his father for his money, not for love. Getting pregnant so soon had been a great big bonus, Joel had explained, one that would pay big dividends to Rochelle for the rest of her life. Joel's father, Grant, would never divorce or abandon the mother of his son, according to Joel. Grant had died 3 years before she and Joel married, even before she had come to work at Jameson Pharmaceuticals. Thanks to Sam McQuaid, who at the time was not only Grant's personal attorney, but also the chief financial officer at the company, Grant had left Rochelle a very wealthy woman. Sam had been Joel's right-hand man, and they'd been friends since college. Had it been only 4 days ago that life as they knew it turned into a living nightmare? Tessa recalled the shock she'd felt when Poppy said that Uncle Liam touched her in places he wasn't supposed to, and she really, really hated it. Then Piper, the more timid of the two girls, had said he touched her too, and she did not like it either. She said Uncle Liam told her that if she told her parents, he would kill her and her family. Still, there seemed to be something strange about their stories, and they had both refused to give her any details when she'd asked. Stunned at the casual manner in which they had told their stories, floored by the revelation, Tessa was momentarily silenced by her daughter's statements. The girls were seated at the small oak table in the kitchen while Tessa flipped pancakes. At first stunned into temporary silence, then, as though struck by a sudden bolt of lightning, her hands had begun to shake so violently that she had dropped the plate of blueberry pancakes she had just made for their breakfast. The vivid yellow serving platter that shattered on the black and white tile resembled mini shards of sunlight. Broken forever. Her precious little girls would be broken forever, too, their psyches damaged. Like a kettle of steaming water, rage boiled inside Tessa, spewing forth minutes after she dropped the plate.
"I swear I will kill that son of a bitch!" Tessa shouted as she gathered both girls in her arms.
Even after Joel got home from his business trip on Thursday afternoon, she had avoided telling him what had happened to their girls, what his half-brother had done. She didn't know why, but something told her she should wait until her return from the mainland. Jill had assured her they would be fine at home with their father and Rosa for the weekend. Tessa took her friend's words to heart, even though Piper and Poppy had begged her not to leave. She told them she had to, that it was very important, and when she returned, she would have a surprise for them. 2 days. They would be fine. As she drove, she tried to pinpoint a time when the girls had resorted to their 5-year-old behavior. Why she hadn't paid more attention baffled her. She was a hands-on mother, or so she thought. But she had simply decided the girls wanted to be little girls again, as they'd started to develop early, and she hated this for them. But it was beyond her to control their physical development. She would explain what was happening to their bodies once they were settled. Had this early development been the start of Liam's molesting them? As much as she wanted to ask them what had actually happened, she chose to wait until Jill advised her to do so. They had been so averse to answering any questions about details. It was almost as if they somehow wanted to protect their uncle. No, that could not be true. Could it? Had they actually been raped? Dear God, surely there would have been a sign. They'd said they were touched in their private areas. Touched. As bad as that was, she prayed that's all that worthless piece of humanity had done. While that would ruin them, for a while at least, being raped? No, she would not even go there. One thing at a time. First, she had to get Jill to take the girls. Then she would tell Joel. Then they would go to the police station and report the crime. She felt a fear unlike any she had ever known. Why? Her worst fears had been realized on Wednesday, when her daughters told her about what had happened. She was returning home to whisk them away before the media got wind of what they'd had to go through. Theirs was one of the most prominent families in Lee County, not to mention the pharmaceutical community. Their daughter's molestation would make the local news and possibly the national news. She drove up the driveway, saw that Joel's car was gone, and felt a wave of relief. She knew she was stalling, putting off the inevitable, but right now all she wanted to do was wrap her girls in her arms and never let them go. She pulled into the garage, where Joel's own Porsche was always kept. He only drove it when he wanted to impress a client. She shook her head, thinking what a waste. Growing up poor had made her wise with her finances, and this was not a wise purchase. But Joel was a multimillionaire, courtesy of his father's brilliance. He could spend his money however he liked. The girls' bikes were leaning against the wall. They loved to ride their bikes. Tessa couldn't remember the last time the three of them had ridden together. Several months ago. Maybe that was when Liam began to abuse them. The tote box of toys she had planned to take to ACT, the Abuse Counseling and Treatment Center, was still in the garage. She volunteered there occasionally, and many of the battered women had children who came to the center with no toys or games. Piper and Poppy had both cleaned out their closets and asked her to give their toys to kids who needed them. She smiled. They had good souls. Would they ever be the same again? She didn't know. But she did know she would do everything in her power to see to it that they got the treatment needed to help them deal with the sexual abuse. God, how she hated those words, especially in connection with her daughters. Inside, the house was quiet. "Rosa!" she called out. Rosa was probably upstairs cleaning, though maybe not, since it was obvious that the downstairs had not been cleaned yet, as there were coffee mugs still in the sink, along with 3 cereal bowls. Maybe she had started upstairs first, shaken things up a bit. Cleaning a 7,000-square-foot home had to be a nightmare at times.
Piper? Poppy?
She headed upstairs. She peeked into the master bedroom, a bit surprised to find the bed still unmade. She looked around the room, and it appeared just as it had on Friday. Joel had probably told Rosa to leave it until Tessa returned. Shaking her head, she went to the girls' rooms. Both doors were open.
"Where are you two?"
she asked, her voice slightly raised. After what they'd told her, she doubted they were hiding. They hadn't wanted her to leave. She searched the bathroom that the girls shared. There were no signs they'd been there recently. She felt their toothbrushes. They were dry as a bone. A chill ran down her spine. Something wasn't right. Alarmed, she started calling their names as loud as she could, but there was no answer. The pool. They were most likely swimming. Rosa always watched them, even though they both were excellent swimmers. Relieved, she went outside to the giant screened-in pool area. She smelled something odd, like a... She wasn't sure, but it was horrible. She walked around the smaller areas of the pool. The girls referred to them as the Lazy River, but there was no sign of them. In the center of the screened-in area was the giant Olympic-size pool. The water looked strange, the color off, like rust or something. She walked closer to the pool and saw 3 bodies floating in the pool. Joel, Piper, Poppy. She screamed their names as she jumped into the pool. She swam to the deep end of the pool. The smell. It was indescribable. Horrified when she realized what she was seeing, she screamed and screamed and screamed. Chapter 12. Tessa sat up in the tub so fast she splashed water everywhere. Her heart was beating so fast it frightened her. She took a deep breath, forcing the images from her mind. Reaching for a towel, she got out of the jacuzzi, her hands trembling. She had tried to save her girls when she jumped in the pool. But their heads were... Dear God, they were inches from decapitation. And Joel, his bloated body was banging against the pool's skimmer. That was the day her nightmare had begun, and God help her, more than 10 years later, it had yet to end. Tessa no longer cared about the luxuries Darlene and Sam had provided. Quickly, she toweled off and put on her new pajamas. Would she ever be able to get the image of that day out of her mind? Maybe when Liam was 6 feet under, she could begin to heal. At 7:20, a forensic van pulled into the drive, causing a total frenzy among the men and women of the press stationed outside. Tessa watched what was happening outside her house on television.
"Has someone else been murdered?" a reporter from WBBK asked the team as they unloaded equipment. "Did Tessa Jameson commit suicide?"
an anchor from WRAL in Orlando shouted at the men and women there to do their jobs. Tessa turned off the TV, trying to decide whether to be amused or disgusted.
"You shouldn't watch that stuff," Sam said.
Tessa made herself another cup of coffee and one for Sam. She liked the Keurig. She didn't speak as she waited for the coffee to brew. When both cups were ready, she took them to the living room and put them on a side table. Sam followed her. "I had complete recall of the murders last night." Tessa had never said this aloud. She was doing her best to keep her emotions under control.
"I heard you,"
Sam told her as he reached for his mug of coffee.
I thought I could save them.
He nodded.
I couldn't.
Tess, I think I see where you're going with this. It wasn't your fault. You did what any decent parent would do. You wanted to shield your children from those creeps.
He gestured, indicating the men and women of the media outside.
I would have done the same thing had I been in your shoes. Stop beating yourself up. You have suffered a loss that I'll never begin to understand. But you have given up 10 years of your life when I know and you know that you had nothing to do with their deaths. I have always believed in your innocence 100%. Never for a moment did I think you were capable of doing what was done. Let's just allow Harry and his team to do their thing. Lee said that he will be here after lunch. We'll get down and dirty then.
She raised her brows.
He will prep you, Tess. Run you through the mill. It will be physically and emotionally exhausting for you. But this is his method, and he gets results, good results. He has never lost a case.
He'd taken to calling her Tess, and she had to admit she liked it.
Are you listening to me?
She nodded.
Damn it, Tess, don't just sit there and stare at me. Say something.
Last night, when I was remembering, something occurred to me.
Go on, Sam coaxed.
I didn't want to look at Joel's face even though he was on his back close to me. But I did. I couldn't recognize him. His face was gone. I cradled the girls. Their smell was unlike anything. I have smelled a lot of chemicals in my profession, mixed many, and nothing I have ever smelled could compare to that odor. I can still smell it. I knew the technical reasons for the smell, but pushed them aside. Tessa paused. It was simply death. The smell of their deaths haunted me. Sometimes I gag when I remember them. Sad, huh? Tears began to roll down her face, and she didn't try to staunch them. Somehow, they felt cleansing.
God, Tess, I didn't know. I'm sorry.
We're in the pharmaceutical business. We know what death is, or rather, what decomposition is. It's different when it's your family. It never goes away. The girls always smelled like the strawberry shampoo I used on their hair. I can't call up that smell at all. But their death scent? That I can. It haunts me. I've tried for years to push these thoughts aside, but I can't anymore. And now here they are, digging, poking into the earth, searching for some piece of evidence to exonerate me, change my life, for the better. And all I can think of is that fucking smell.
Tess, it's okay to have these feelings. You need to talk about them. Stop persecuting yourself. This was not your fault.
Sam got up and went to the kitchen, coming back with a wad of paper towels.
Here,
he said, handing them to her. When she didn't take them, he used them to wipe her tears. His touch was gentle, caring. Sam, don't, she said.
Stop it already. You're punishing yourself for feeling. It's all right, Tess.
She shook her head. Nothing will ever be all right again, no matter what happens. A tap on the glass doors interrupted their conversation. It was Harry. Sam motioned for him to come inside. Harry was dripping with sweat, even though the December morning wasn't as humid as it normally was. He removed a handkerchief from his pocket and dabbed at his forehead.
Harry, let's go into the kitchen. I'll get you a cold drink. Tess?
They both followed Sam into the kitchen. Tessa stood next to the door that led to the garage,
while Harry sat at the bar and gulped down the last of the iced tea.
Thanks.
What are you even searching for? Tessa asked Harry. Didn't they examine every inch of this place already?
That's what I plan to find out.
He stood up.
I'm going back to the lab for now, but my crew will continue searching. If they find anything to report, I'll let you know.
Harry gave a half-hearted salute, then left through the glass doors in the living room. Tessa and Sam went into the living room and sat down in the chairs near the window. Neither Tessa nor Sam spoke for a minute. Sam spoke first.
They may not find anything, Tessa. Everything was searched before and nothing turned up. And as of now, there are no other suspects.
There's Liam, for heaven's sake. How in the hell can you forget him? He's been off the map since the murders. I know he's responsible for this. My daughters told me. He told them he would kill them and their family if they told. Liam must have known. How would he have known that the girls told her what he'd done to them? She had told no one. No one except Jill. I need to make a phone call, Sam. I'll just be a minute, Tessa said, then raced into the kitchen where she could speak in private. Her heart raced at this new revelation. Why hadn't she thought of this before? She sat on one of the bar stools with the phone in her hand and dialed Jill's number from memory. It was a weekday. She would be in her office.
Dr. Amber's office, this is Amanda, replied a friendly voice.
I need to speak with Dr. Amber's.
Are you a patient? If so, I'll be happy to take your number and have her return your call as soon as possible.
No, I'm not a patient. I used to be her best friend. Tell her it's Tessa and it's an emergency. She wasn't her best friend anymore, but she didn't care about that now. She needed to speak with Jill ASAP.
Please hold, the pleasant voice instructed. She waited.
Tessa?
Jill Amber sounded as if she didn't believe it was her.
The one and only, she confirmed.
I need to see you, Jill. It's urgent. I'm sure you have heard the news. Can you come here to the house? You'll have to go around to the back. The media.
Tessa, it's so good to hear your voice. And hell yes, I heard the news. It's on every station. Of course I'll come to see you. Just name the time and place. You know, I tried to visit you. In prison. They told me you didn't want to see me. Not that it matters now, Jill said. I'll cancel my appointments for the rest of the day. I can be at your place within a half hour.
Tessa breathed a sigh of relief. She had refused Jill's visits because they were a reminder of all the evil Poppy and Piper suffered. It wasn't Jill's fault. It was the memories. Thank you, Jill. I'm sorry about the visits. I just couldn't. It hurt.
Still does. But that's in the past, and I hope you'll forgive me.
Of course. I have already. I had an idea that you were suffering. I am a forensic psychiatrist, remember?
I know. I need to talk to you about that weekend, Tessa stated, tucking her emotions away in that safe place in the back of her mind. It's urgent.
Give me half an hour, Jill said. I know this probably isn't the right time, but I need you to know how much your reaching out to me means.
I have watched the news reports.
Hell, I have wanted to smack a few of those plumped-up blonde reporters who try to pass themselves off as intelligent. Every time they said your name, it pissed me off.
Tessa smiled. This was the Jill she knew. She had not changed one bit. Thanks, Jill. That's what I needed to hear. I'll see you shortly, Tessa said, then hung up the phone. She returned to the living room and saw that Sam had disappeared. Finally, a few minutes alone. She returned to the kitchen and started brewing her fourth cup of coffee. Sneaking a glimpse out the kitchen window, she saw that the number of media vans seemed to have doubled. Now, in addition to reporters from all the local news outlets, the lead anchors of three of the major networks, CNN, NBC, and CBS, stood outside the entrance, hoping to get the first scoop. It made her sick. She held the media partially responsible for her daughter's deaths. Had she not feared them, feared how they would report what happened to Piper and Poppy, her daughters might be alive today. She knew their identities would have been protected because of their age, but she had also known that that wouldn't have stopped some nosy reporter from digging deep. Without Sam under her feet, she decided that now was a good time to go to the girls' rooms. Before Jill came over, she needed to do this. She drained the last of her coffee, rinsed the cup, and set it beside the Keurig. If she were convicted again, she would hate going back to prison coffee. She rolled her eyes at her own idiocy. Coffee was not important. This was simply her way of coping with stress, thinking of things that are meaningless. Coffee, the two large jeans she wore, ankle monitors, which she did not like the weight of, but it was a small distraction compared to what she was about to do. At the top of the stairs, she stopped once she was standing outside their rooms. She had to do this, get it over with, as postponing it again would most likely make it worse. A dozen images flashed before her. Before she allowed them to completely take over, she pushed the door to Piper's room aside. Her body stiffened in shock. The blood drained from her face. She began to shake as she stood in the center of the room. It was exactly as it had been the day she had left for San Maribel. Her memory of this room was exactly as she remembered it from that last day. Nothing had changed. It was as though she had stepped back in time. Shaking, she went over to Piper's bed and saw that the lavender sheets were the same. As she had packed their clothes that fateful day, she had been surprised when Piper left the sheets all twisted at the foot of the bed. Carefully, she eased herself down onto the twin-size bed, running her hand across the silky purple comforter. Purple had been Piper's favorite color. Tessa smoothed the wrinkles from the comforter, then looked at the pillow and swore it still bore indentations from Piper's head. Tears filled her eyes, and she picked up the pillow, brought it close to her face, and inhaled. She inhaled again, and swore she could smell the strawberry shampoo the girls loved. It was impossible, she knew, given the passage of time. She must be imagining this because it's what her mind wanted her to smell, and scent was a true memory provoker. A trick, she knew. But it didn't matter. Any small connection to her daughters mattered, whether real or imagined. Tessa returned the pillow to the bed, then crossed the room, where she entered the bathroom that separated the girls' rooms. Again, she was taken aback when she saw that it remained precisely as it had been all those years ago. The same red and purple rugs, the red and purple striped shower curtain. She recalled shopping for the girls when they'd decided they wanted their signature colors in the bathroom. Unbelievable, she thought, as it, too, was the same. She opened the drawers and was surprised to find they were empty. Opening the medicine cabinet, she expected to see extra tubes of toothpaste, a few stray hair barrettes, all the supplies she had put there herself. But it was also empty. Saddened, but knowing she had to continue with what she had begun, she entered Poppy's room. Struck by the normalcy of the bedroom as she stood in the doorway, she had trouble connecting her little girl's bedrooms to the images she had seen in the pool. Poppy's favorite color was red. She had always told Tessa it was because her name was a red flower, and they matched. More tears.
But had she not cried, she would have questioned herself. The room was as she remembered. Poppy's bed was made. Her red and white striped comforter was exactly as it had been the day Tessa had left for San Maribel, the last day she had seen her daughters alive. Tessa had so many memories of her daughters in these two rooms. She had always spent a few minutes alone with each of them before they went to bed at night. Twins, but separate individuals, each with a unique identity. She and Joel did their best to encourage each of them to be true to herself. Just because they were twins did not mean they had to wear matching clothes or like and dislike the same things. But there were many things they had in common, and they said it made them feel connected. She had always heard twins were physically in tune with one another, and she saw this in the girls. Tessa walked around the room, touching the pillow, and again, she put the pillow up to her face, inhaling. But she didn't smell strawberry shampoo. All she smelled was fabric softener. Odd, as she had not smelled this in Piper's room. Had Sam or Darlene washed the pillowcase? And if so, why not wash Piper's, too? She pulled the comforter aside and sat on the bed, running her hands back and forth across the sheets. She leaned down to smell them, but they didn't smell like Downy or Snuggle, the two fabric softeners she had always used. This struck her as odd, but everything about her life was odd, from the time of her arrest until now. She was about to remake the bed when she saw the corner of a sheet of paper sticking out from beneath the mattress. Carefully, she eased the paper out and saw that it was a sheet of the drawing paper the girls used. One side was blank. Odd. She turned the paper onto the opposite side and saw that something had been drawn on it. She dropped down onto the bed to look at the picture more carefully. It was Poppy's. There were four sketches of people. After a closer look, Tessa saw that it was their family, but this particular drawing was in charcoal. She remembered when they'd learned to use charcoal in their weekly art classes. Poppy had been quite the artist. Tessa examined the drawing and was able to make out the faces. One was clearly a picture of Tessa, and the resemblance was impressive. Poppy had drawn herself and Piper, depicting their long hair, which she knew was strawberry blonde, and their bright blue eyes. They were identical, yet each had her own unique features. Poppy's nose was slightly more upturned. Piper was over an inch taller. The drawing reflected these slight differences. At first glance, the man's features were hard to bring into focus, as an X had been slashed across his face. She took the picture over to the window to get a clearer look, since the sun's rays were lighting up that half of the room. She scrunched her eyes, as her farsightedness had gotten worse with age. The details were indisputable. The face in the picture definitely belonged to her husband, Joel. She felt lightheaded, and fearing she might faint, she had to sit on the bed. Dear God, what does this mean? Chapter 13. Tessa tried to calm herself. She inhaled, then exhaled. Her hands shook like wind-blown palm fronds during a hurricane. She stared at the drawing again, thinking that surely she was mistaken. Poppy would never do something like this. Joel was her father. She had loved him. She had looked up to him as Piper had. While they weren't daddy's girls, they'd always shared a good father-daughter relationship. With shaking hands, she took the paper back over to the window, where the sunlight gave her a clearer view. The eyes were Joel's, their unique almond shape apparent. The hair was different, slightly shorter than his. He'd always let it grow a bit longer, mostly because he was just too busy to schedule the time for a haircut. The nose and mouth could have belonged to any man. She used her fingernail to try and scrape the red away,
thinking that perhaps it was a crayon, but when she scraped her nail across the page, the red remained solid. Most likely it was made by a Sharpie. This could mean anything. Poppy liked to do what she had always called shock drawing, a concept she had made up about a year before. It was still difficult to use the words, and even more so now that she was in her daughter's rooms. She would have to show this to Jill. It might mean nothing, but it was worth having it checked. Also, it was odd. Why would this be here so many years after the fact? Yes, the rooms were intact, mostly, but hadn't the police searched their rooms? Were they not considered a part of the crime scene? She had been in such a state of shock afterward. She had never had an opportunity to revisit their rooms. She could ask Sam or Lee, but she needed Jill to see this first. Careful not to fold the drawing, but at the same time not wanting Sam to see her find, she rolled it into a tube shape and tucked it beneath the gray sweatshirt she was wearing. Downstairs, there was still no sign of Sam. Good. She did not want to see him now. He had an uncanny way of seeing right through her. Sure that Joel was never this much in tune with her, she didn't know if she should be suspicious or flattered. A knock on the door startled her. Jill. She had entered around the back of the house to the pool area so that she could avoid entering in full view of the mass of reporters gathered at the entrance to the so-called private gated community. Tessa hurried to open the sliding glass doors. Her face brightened just seeing her old friend there. "You haven't changed one bit in the last 10 years, she said, embracing her friend. Jill's dark brown hair sparkled, and her brown eyes were as kind as Tessa remembered. Wearing a pair of black slacks and a teal-colored blouse with matching teal flats, Jill looked professional, but not so much that it would intimidate. Casual professional, Tessa thought. "And don't say I haven't, because I know better," Tessa instructed, her eyes filling with new tears.
"Given what you have been through for the past decade, you look better than I'd expected."
Jill hugged her back, and Tessa knew that calling her had been the right decision. They looked at each other for a few seconds before Tessa spoke. "You want to have coffee in the kitchen? Sam got this newfangled coffee maker. It's a Keurig. Pretty neat."
"That sounds perfect. Tessa, everyone has a Keurig now."
Catching her mistake, she said,
"Shit, I didn't mean that. It's like the Mr. Coffee of the 90s. Remember?"
She smiled. "Don't bother walking on eggshells. I'm tough. Prison does that to a person." "It's okay. I'm not made of glass." Tessa brewed 2 cups of coffee. "Cream, no sugar?"
"You remembered," Jill said, taking the cup from her.
"I had a lot of time on my hands. I probably remember more than most," Tessa explained. Once they were settled at the bar in the kitchen, she made sure that Sam, as well as Harry's forensic team, were still out of earshot. She took a deep breath and prepared to ask the question that just might blow her away. "Jill, that day when you examined the girls, you have never repeated what they told you, have you?"
"Heavens, no. I'm not allowed to break patient confidentiality. Why are you asking me this now? I didn't even tell Joel. Remember, you swore me to silence? I would never break your trust, and certainly that of the girls. What's happened? I know you wouldn't ask me this if you didn't have a good reason. We have always trusted one another, right?"
"Yes, we have. That's why I called." She removed the rolled-up paper from beneath her shirt. "Tell me your first impression of this." She handed Jill the sketch, doing her best to keep a neutral expression on her face. She didn't want to influence Jill's first reaction. Tessa watched while Jill examined the drawing very carefully. Though she was sure that she was making too much of this,
she still couldn't help herself. She had to know if there was a hidden meaning that her untrained eye had not seen.
"Where did this come from?"